Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A New Day Show. My name is Dynamic Daphne, the Queen of the Empowered Soul, and I'm your host this morning, and you are just getting ready to experience one of the greatest episodes that we have ever had so far. And our guest this morning is none other than Dr. George Frazier from FrazierNet in Cleveland, Ohio, and we are going to get him up and running in a few minutes. So I just want to get ready to do a little housekeeping. And, of course, we are broadcasting out of Brookfield, Connecticut, just like we do every day when we're on the air here. And I really don't want to take anything for granted. I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us this morning. We greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate it. The number for you to call in with your questions is 646-915-8166. And we also have the chat room up and running. And thank you, Paul, for coming on. Paul, I know, is a diligent supporter of Dr. Frazier, and he's in the chat room from the Washington, D.C. area. I want to thank Paul for coming on. And for you to be part of the chat room, you can just sign on to Blog Talk Radio /Daphne-Clark-Hudson. And I'll take your questions from the chat room as well as from the telephone. I also want to remind you to visit my website, clarkhudson.com. And you can learn more about the one-eye mall that Brian Franklin spoke about yesterday. I also want to encourage you to please visit the past episodes. Those are available on demand. And we ask that you mark us as one of your favorites. This way you will be kept informed of all the things that we are doing here on the show. I greatly want to ask you to support us, because my growth depends on you. So if you at all are interested in my mission and vision, I want you to go there and give me some comments on the show. And as I had promised, I don't want to take too much from our guest. And you can read his bio on the blog, but I want to go ahead and just read for you the 10 interesting facts about Dr. George Frazier. The first one is that George is one of 11 children sent to an orphanage at age 3, raised in foster homes on the streets of New York, earned a vocational high school diploma in woodworking because one believed he was not college material. George is in the Guinness Book of Records for coordinating the world's largest 1.4 million balloon release for United Way of Cleveland on September the 27th, 1986. George built a global network of 40,000 people, which meets annually during a four-day global conference entitled Power Networking. And you know that conference is held every June. Now it's meeting in Atlanta, Georgia. The fourth point about George is with his best-selling books, the first one, Success Runs in Our Race, The Complete Guide to Effective Networking in Black America, he started the networking movement in Black America. The fifth point is, in 1994, he failed to cash in on the dot-com revolution by ignoring a chance to invest and support a company owned by close personal friends that sold for $21 million in March of 2000. So much for that, so much for the vision thing. The sixth point is that he's been awarded 15 Keys to Cities, won over 200 awards and citations for leadership, personal excellence, team building, to include six covers of major magazines, an honorary doctorate degree of the United Negro College Fund National Volunteer Year Award. The seventh point is, he's the author of four critically acclaimed bestsellers and the only professional speaker to have five of his speeches selected to be published and distributed worldwide by Virtual Speeches of the Day, the best thought of the best minds of current national issues. And the eighth point is, he spent 17 years in leadership position with Procter & Gamble, United Way, and Ford Motor Company, of all which added great value to his growth and investment in his local entrepreneurship of starting a global networking movement. Happily married for 36 years, raised two wonderful sons, Kyle and Scott, and the 10th point, has built a leading edge business that has positioned him as an internationally renowned networking guru, diversity and economic development expert, and highly sought after speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Dr. George Fraser. George, good morning.
Good morning, Dynamic Daphne. Thank you so much for that generous introduction. I truly appreciate it.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, because, you know, I need for our listeners to understand that you are no ordinary person. Because, George, I got to be honest, I had no true understanding about what networking meant until I met you. Because I prior to meeting you and becoming part of the power networking movement, I thought networking meant distributing and collecting business cards, but I quickly learned otherwise. So without any ado, I just want to go ahead and just open up the mic, George, to you.
Well, first of all, as I said earlier, it is really an honor to be a part of your blog radio program, and congratulations on making the commitment to give your voice and to speak your voice publicly to improve and to uplift and to educate and to empower our people. God bless you for doing that. That's leadership. And as you know, I define leadership specifically in Black America, and that is to be a leader, is to be awake and alert and to be dissatisfied at all times. Yes, we have come a long way, but we have much further to go. Yes, we have garnered much in this great country, but there's still much more work to do. Therefore, like you, I am not happy. But I am motivated by a positive anger directed towards positive change. That's the key there, positive change. And we know that you will never change that which you tolerate, and you will only change when you get angry. Dr. King was angry. Malcolm was angry. Gandhi was angry. Mandela was angry. Du Bois was angry. In fact, Du Bois was so angry with America, he left America never to return. Marcus Garvey was angry. So, you know, we cannot be satisfied. No one listening to you this morning must be satisfied with what we have garnered, in spite of the fact that we have elected this incredible couple to be a leader of the free world, led by Barack Obama and his incredible wife, Michelle Obama. Yes, that is a wonderful and historic thing, but there is still much more work to do. And so you are a leader because you are not happy with the status quo, and as a result of that, you have used your anger in a very positive way to invest and to teach and to give back to our community so that we can lift our people up and take them to the next level in life. And most importantly, as you've heard me say a million times, Daphne, that we have incredible resources in Black America, incredible resources. We are a $913 billion annual economy. If Black people were a nation, we would be the 10th richest nation in the entire world. Right? And if you want to dimensionalize how large $913 billion is, you could take every country on the continent of Africa, including Madagascar on the west and the Cape Verde Islands on the east, combine their gross domestic product, everything that they produce, and it would not equal the $913 billion that we bring to the table in a single year. You could take the 13 countries in the Caribbean, combine their gross domestic product, add it to the continent of Africa, and it would not equal the $913 billion that African Americans bring to the table in a single year. If you think all of the oil-producing countries are wealthy with their oil revenues, they are very wealthy. But you can take every single country in the entire world producing a single drop of oil, combine them, and it would not equal the $913 billion that we bring to the table in a single year. So we are an incredible people in terms of wealth. So we're not poor, we're just broke, because we know that 95% of our resources are not recycled back in our community. Only 5% of our dollars, and this is what Brian Franklin talks about so often, only 5% of our dollars are recycled in our community, and we're some of America's most conspicuous consumers. We've taken the art of consumption to a whole new level, and hopefully this economic crisis that we're all going through will change our habits, as the Depression changed the habits of our parents, and they learned lessons from the Depression. Hopefully this economic crisis, like none that we've ever seen in our lifetime, will change our consumption habits and our spending habits. So we have money. There's just no question about that. As Black people, I travel all over the world. In the last 19 months, I've been in 191 different cities around the country and around the globe. I've been every place that Black people have been dispersed. I've been to South Africa, East Africa, West Africa, North Africa, all over South America, and all over the Caribbean. And there are no Black people in the entire world doing better than we are. In fact, if the truth be known, we are the beacon of hope for every single person of African descent in the entire world. And we know, because we are morally grounded and spiritually rooted people, that to whom much is given, much is required. So yes, we have money. We have intellectual capital. If you just look at my generation alone, our generation, Daphne, the baby boomer generation, we, in just our generation alone, we have amassed over 500 billion hours of formal education and professional training from just one generation alone. And if you put $10 per hour on each of those hours and try to get an education or try to get professional training for 10 bucks an hour, but let's be conservative for the sake of this discussion.
Yeah.
That would mean that our collective intellectual capital base from just one generation alone is worth in excess of $5 trillion from just one generation alone. So we have collective brain power. And 60% of the black workforce in America, nearly 9 million of us, are in executive, managerial, supervisory, professional, specialty, vocational, technical, administrative, sales, and business ownership positions. There's an army of potential role models and mentors to help those who are stuck and who are stuck in the cycle of poverty. In fact, there is no army in the entire world larger than the army of black people that have succeeded in this country. So make no mistake about it, success runs in our race. And God ain't given us anything else. You know, as you've heard me say a million times, He ain't given us anything else until we demonstrate to God that we can be better stewards of that which He has already provided us. So we are an incredible, fortunate people. It is time for us to connect the dots, which is what I talk about. It is time for us to more effectively network and leverage our collective resources with each other. It's time for us to do what our Jewish brothers and sisters are doing, what our Asian brothers and sisters are doing, what our Arab brothers and sisters are doing. It is time that we get together to get ahead, and that we have a lot of us doing a little instead of a few of us doing a lot.
Right. You know, George, thank you so much for mentioning that, because I mentioned earlier on in the opening that Paul Von Lawrence, who is in the chat room, Paul came to the very first Power Networking Conference in Cleveland, Ohio, and so did I. And it changed both our lives. Mm-hmm. And Paul is now doing some phenomenal work over in the Washington, D.C. area just to get our people to change the way we think. You know, black people think that we have to do it by ourselves, but we are not going to make any progress when we operate as lone rangers. We need to collaborate together so we can make a difference.
That's right. That's right. And every cultural group in America understands that. And so at FraserNet, which is a 21-year-old company. That's what we are. We're 21 years old. And our vision is sort of to lead a values and principle-based global networking movement that teaches what I call net building and brings together diverse human resources to increase opportunities for people of African descent. That's, you know, that's our vision. And we have two very simple goals. And we've had these goals, as you well know, for 21 years. And so we invite people to join our network, and there are 40,000 top black professionals, business owners, and community leaders who belong to our network. And we invite people who share in this vision, who share our doctrine, who want to help us as a people to achieve these two goals. And what are the two goals? Very simple goals. Number one, to build wealth that can be transferred intergenerationally. It's not that we don't have wealth, we're just not transferring it. There was an interesting article on the front page of USA Today last November. It was an article about black people and their money. And what the article said, and people can look it up at USA Today, what the article said about black people and their money in America is that the baby boomer generation, the black baby boomer generation in the United States, will be the first generation to raise another generation of black people that will not do better than them. So our ancestors and forefathers must be rolling over in their grave. In 400 years of Africans in America, right, we are the first generation to make it another generation worse off than us. So you can count me out of that equation. I'm not going to contribute to that very negative statistic. So we have to fix that. It is our moral and spiritual obligation to change our behavior so we do not leave a generation here worse off than us. I don't want to be a part of a generation that does that. So our goal, our number one goal at the Power Networking Conference, is to help people build wealth that can be transferred intergenerationally. And the second goal is to make black people the number one employer of black people in the 21st century. Now, you notice I said the 21st century. I didn't say next week.
Yes.
I didn't say next year. I didn't say even this generation. I said in the 21st century because I deeply believe that it's going to take another 3 to 5 generations to achieve this goal. It's going to be done once we learn how to effectively network and connect the dots with each other. That's when we will, when we learn how to do that, because I think that's the final thing that God wants us to learn how to do, and that is to love each other, to be supportive of each other, to be connected to each other, and to leverage resources. So, those are the two goals, and we invite people to come to the Power Networking Conference, which is June 25th through 27th this year in Atlanta at the Marriott Marquis, and participate with thousands of people who share in this vision, who share in this mission. What is FraserNet? FraserNet is a doctrine-based social networking movement. That's what we are. If you want to be Catholic, you have to believe in the Catholic doctrine. If you want to be Baptist and go to Baptist church, fundamentally, you must believe in the Baptist doctrine. If you want to be Christian, you have to believe in the Christian doctrine. We have a doctrine, and we have core values, we have guiding principles, we have a vision, we have a mission, and we have networking protocols. In other words, we have a methodology and a requirement on the way people should be networking with each other. And as you well know, we talk about this all the time, that networking is not about getting, it's about giving. And so therefore, most people are networking the wrong way, right? They go to important events, they see important people, they schmooze them up, they get their business card, and the very next day they call them up and say, could you give me a sponsorship? Could you give me a job? Could you give me a donation for my foundation? Could you give me a piece of business for a contract I'm trying to close? That's not networking, that's begging, right?
Begging.
So we know.
George.
Right.
Mm-hmm. George, just hold your thought. We have a caller on the line, and I want to take the caller.
Sure.
But before we do that, I want to piggyback on us creating wealth. We are in an era where everybody's looking for microwave results, and they have to understand that the vision and the mission of FraserNet and the movement, it's a process.
That's right.
And this is why it has been extended over the 21st century, because we don't necessarily need to complete it, but we are certainly going to contribute what we can before we exit here.
That's right.
So
that's right.
I just wanted to put my 2 cents in. Caller, good morning. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning, Daphne, and good morning, George. This is Paul Van.
Hi, Paul.
Hey,
thank you so much for being with us this morning. And again, congratulate you on your work and staying the course. That's really the point here. You've charted a good and righteous course, and you've stayed that course. Congratulations, and thank you for that.
All right. Thank you very much. And my question was, and first of all, George, what I want to do is thank you for that first annual conference, because it did change my life. That's the first thing I want to say.
God bless you. Thank you.
And then secondly, I know in 2002 when I was there in Cleveland along with Daphne, a campaign slogan, the change that President Obama was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You were talking about that in 2002.
Oh yeah, that's right. So it wasn't new to me, but that's
right.
Fine. It was new to the American people,
exactly.
Which is where he targeted that, and he was right on point to use that. But
absolutely.
We have been using that idea, that slogan, for many, 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 many years.
Exactly.
But which is no different than. Black people are very, very, very creative, and we have a lot of feeling and a lot of insight about how things should be and what things should be in this great country that we live in. I tell people all the time, we are a very special people. We are very special. And the issue, Paul, I think, is that too many of our brothers and sisters do not know who they are. You know, that's
right.
Really the issue. They do not know who they are. And when I watch our sisters shake their behinds on BET, or I see a brother gangbanging, I deeply understand at my core. When I watch them, I say to myself, they have no clue on who they really are, or they would not lower themselves to do such a thing
right.
in public. There's no way. They do not know that we are the children of the slaves that would not die, that we have the genetic encoding of the great kings and queens of Africa, that we have the genetic stock of the world's first great mathematicians, engineers, and scientists, mm-hmm. that we were building pyramids and solving complex engineering problems when other cultures were living in huts, eating each other. And in spite of the fact that America kept its foot on our throat for 350 years, we overcame that and rose like the phoenix. And if everything happens for a reason, and it does, if everything happens for a reason and serves us in some special way, and we will never understand that reason looking forward, and we will only understand it looking backwards, then if that's true, and I deeply believe it is true, maybe we were not brought here. Maybe we were sent here. Do you believe
that God?
Yes. Do you believe that God would put His weakest people here to do His toughest job? I don't think so. And you know, how could an America who could morally, spiritually, and biblically justify the kidnapping, raping, and pillaging of another people for 300 years have any moral or spiritual grounding? And perhaps had God not sent us here, America might have self-destructed by now. So we are an awesome and powerful people. We are the moral and spiritual consciousness of this country. This country is in the worst shape that it's been in our lifetime, and you see that we have a morally grounded and spiritually rooted black man leading the free world. I rest my case.
I tell you, you said it all right there, and I think what people should really carry with them, I'm really going to encourage everyone listening and those that will listen to attend the Power Networking Conference this June in Atlanta, because it is a life-changing experience. And I want to thank you, George, and Daphne, I want to congratulate you on another great show. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. George, we have 32 minutes remaining, and I know you have a lot.
Time flies, isn't it, when you're having fun?
I'm telling you.
Oh,
let us now attempt to go into your books, and we're going to start at the beginning. Let's talk about success runs in our race.
Well, we know. I mean, when I, you know, that saying, that book title, I wrote that book 15 years ago. Success Runs in Our Race, The Complete Guide to Effective Networking in the African-American Community. I wrote that book, believe it or not, 15 years ago, and then revised it for its 10th anniversary in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the book that started the networking conversation in Black America and ultimately started the networking movement. But I worked on it for about 2 years, and I had no title. I had no title for it. I didn't know what I wanted to call it. And I prayed to God that He would give me a title that would register and resonate with black people. And I went to sleep one night, and I, you know how sometimes you get an idea and you just pop up out of bed? And that was the title that God gave me, Success Runs in Our Race. Well, that title says so many things. It's a benefit title. It's a title full of truth. And it says a lot in a little, you know. I want to thank God one more time for giving me that title, because it's been used in so many powerful and positive ways in our community over the last 15 or 16 years. But fundamentally, the essence of that book said to black people that it is time for us to connect the dots. It is time for us to, as I said earlier, get together to get ahead. It is time for us to love ourselves, and the more we love ourselves, the more we will love our people. You see, if I do not love me, there is no way that I can love you, because when I look at you, you become a reflection of me. Powerful networking begins with self-love. Self-love begins with understanding who you are. And I explained that in the first parts of the book. People are looking for a book that just is full of networking tips, facts, and ideas. Well, yes, the second half of the book is full of networking tips, facts, and ideas, but the first half of the book is A, my story, and B, an expression of, an explanation of, and some history of where we have come from in the area of networking and where we must go utilizing networking. Everything from the Underground Railroad, Harriet Tubman, to building a new Underground Railroad. The Underground Railroad was, in fact, a network, no question about that. And it saved many of our people. And Harriet Tubman was really the first one to really build the kind of network that I am talking about. Now, prior to that, yes, we had networks. We didn't call them that back in the day. You know, we had fraternities and sororities, and we had our church groups, and we had our banks, and we had our communities, no question about that. And then integration, came about, and then we left our communities, we left our banks, we left our insurance companies, so that we can go live next to the white man, so that we can educate our children in schools that were in quote integrated. And I think that whole integration idea was a powerful idea, and I'm glad for it, but it was a double-edged sword, because we abandon our own community. We abandon our own network so that we can become a part of other networks. And by the way, we were the only people in America to do that. Jewish people did not abandon Jewish people. Asian people did not abandon Asian people. Arab people did not abandon Arab people to be with other people. Of course, what we wanted was the freedom to move around and ultimate options that we could pick and choose from. No question about that. But it was a wrong move to leave our children, to leave the less fortunate, to leave our banks, to leave our insurance companies, to leave our businesses, and for the sake of living next to or purchasing from an institution or place that does not look like us. That was a real big mistake. No one did that but black people. So we have to get back to that idea. We have to get back to supporting each other. There's a wonderful experiment going on right now. I know you've been following it on the internet. There's a couple out of Chicago. And this experiment, it's called the Economic Experiment, and you can look at it right on YouTube. But it's a Chicago couple, a very smart Chicago couple, who is committed publicly to spend as many of their dollars with black business owners and black professionals as humanly possible in a given year, and to track those dollars live on the internet every single day. So the last time I checked, which was about 3 weeks ago, it was the end of the first quarter of the year, they had spent about $19,000 specifically with black-owned businesses and professionals. So this is the kind of thing that we have to get back to. No, we can't spend all of our money with black people. We're not saying that, but we certainly can spend more than 2 or 3 or 4%. And when we recycle those dollars back into our community, what does that do for black people? It increases their business, and as we increase their business, it increases their opportunity to hire other black people that look like them. And and as we hire more black people, we're able to help black families educate and feed and house their children. So it creates more jobs, and it creates more revenues that are recycled in our community. Right now, 95% of our dollars go in one direction, away from us. In the Jewish community, the dollars recycle between 7 and 9 times. So that's the kind of thing, slowly but surely, as we demonstrate to our own, because again, we have some issues with black people have issues with black people. Make no mistake about that. The Willie Lynch letter, the Willie Lynch speech spoke to that profoundly in terms of the early training of our masters to control us was to divide and conquer us and to have us trust and believe and love only them and not even trust our own. And that whole psychology, that whole idea has trickled down for generations. Now, not everybody, not all black people feel
not
that
everybody.
Way. Make no mistake that. But still a significant number. And we have to fix that. We have to work on our heads. We have to work on our subconscious mind.
Change our thinking.
And we have to see each other and feel differently about each other. That's at the base. That's at the core.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what Success Runs in Our Race deals with. It deals with how do we feel about each other? What are the things that we can do to change the paradigm that we have that has been passed on to us for generations? I talk about a rites of passage program that I went through in my mid-40s that actually changed my whole life and changed how I view my own community, because subconsciously I was doing what everybody else was doing. And again, I said subconsciously. I didn't even, I don't think most black people even are conscious of how they treat, talk to, and view the perception of their own people. I don't think it's a conscious thing. I think it's a subconscious thing. And we have to catch ourselves, and then we have to change that. And that's going to take
time. You know
something,
George? I want to go some. We have 24 minutes remaining. But I want to piggyback on something you said. You were working on Success Runs in Our Race, even when you didn't have a title.
Right.
And what that showed me is your obedience. You weren't sitting around to wait for a title to start writing.
Right.
You had the idea from God, and you started emptying all your experiences, your story, on the page. And when God saw that you were obedient, he said, now, bam, here is the title. A lot of our people sit around waiting for everything, every piece of the puzzle to come together. And I'm waiting on God. I'm praying about it. And I say, God already give you the idea. Start, and he will give you the next piece of the puzzle.
That's right.
A month ago, George, I was at a meeting a month ago. And, of course, I'm always mentioning about FraserNet and the power networking. And I mentioned your name, and there was a man in the meeting. He grabbed his backpack out. And he took out the paperback copy of Success Runs in Our Race that he had bought way back when.
Mm.
And you can see that this man used the book. It's highlighted.
Right.
The covers is all fold over and everything.
Mm.
And he said, this book changed my life.
That's right. That's right. And
this book changed my life.
That's a powerful idea. And, you know, every movement, and you said it so correctly and so poignantly and so accurately, Daphne, this is a movement. This is a movement. That's what we are starting here. It's a movement that started 20 years ago, and it's a movement that teaches our people self-love, and through self-love, we work with and through each other, and we leverage our resources to take our people and our community and our families to the next level. That's a movement. That's a networking movement. And so Success Runs in Our Race lays out that movement in very clear, concise, specific details. And anyone that reads that book, and thank God that book is still a bestseller even 15 years later, anyone that reads that book will have the doctrine, they will have the formula, they will have specificity, they will have marching orders, they will have the rules and regulations of proper networking. If you follow that book, it would be impossible to fail, because everything you need around effective networking and building the relationships that you need in life is right in that book. That is sort of our little Bible for networking.
Yes, yes,
so,
yes, it is.
God bless them. And you're right. I've met many people in places that I've appeared around the country. They come to the event that I'm speaking at with a tattered pages of the first edition of Success Runs in Our Race, and let alone the second edition. So, yeah, read the book. Where can you get the book? You can get the book at Amazon.com. It's very inexpensive. I think it's under $15, but it's a modern day classic. It's required reading in 57 historically black colleges, and again, it's the book that started the networking movement in Black America. So anyone that wants to aspire to be a dynamic Daphne or George Fraser, if you want to be like us, read that book. it gives you essentially everything that we are doing to be where we are today.
You know something, George? The other thing I noticed that our people is lacking is that they don't want to read. They don't invest in themselves. You know how many people, adult folks, are walking out in our communities that doesn't have a library card? And you send them to the bookstore. They don't want to do that.
I know.
But in order to excel, you need to invest in yourselves.
You have to read to lead. In fact, if you think about if you think about leadership, historical leadership, regardless of the country, every great leader has either been a speaker and or a writer. And you cannot write without reading, okay?
Exactly.
Here's a commitment I think everyone should make who's listening today. If you read, let me back up. The average American reads one book a year. If you make a commitment to read one book a month, in 5 years, you will have read 60 books. And the average American will have only read five. Who's going to be smarter? Who's going to be better prepared, right? Who's going to be better prepared to take advantage of the opportunities, the unlimited opportunities that we have out here? And that's the beautiful thing about this country. This is a great country, and there are unlimited opportunities in this country. And, yes, things go up and things go down. Things are good. Things are, you know, but still, with the opportunities, there's no place that I've been in the world where there are as many opportunities for people of color as this great country. So I don't think that we lack opportunity. I think we lack capacity, and we have to build our capacity, our capacity to take advantage of the tremendous opportunities. And to do that, you've got to read. And today, there's no excuse because they have books on CD, right?
You can on cell phone too. They can download it to their cell phones.
Absolutely.
So you know they can take actions.
You can talk to a university.
That's right. That's right. George, we have 17 minutes remaining, and I know we have two more books. We got to talk about CRIC, but we also have Race for Success. I want you to, you know, talk to the listeners about that, but we got to talk about CRIC. So let's go to
Just a quick thing on Race for Success was my second book. And what I did, I do about one book every 4 years. That's my gestation period. It's longer than an elephant, you know. But I got to think about it. So I write a book about every 4 years. And so Race for Success was a wonderful book that after I talked about networking and success runs in our race, I said, okay, if our people are going to become effective networkers, where are the best opportunities? Where can we make a profit and make a difference? Where can we do well while doing good? And so I did a deep analysis of the business and professional landscape, and I said, here are 10 areas of opportunity that I believe that if black people focus on, they could not only make money, but they could make a difference in our community. That's really what success, Race for Success, was all about. And so I wanted to give people, I wanted to give our people some direction. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Not just say, you know, here's what we ought to do, but here's some direction. So basically, the areas of opportunity, I don't know if you remember, were education and training, knowing that knowledge is power. There's huge opportunities. We needed more black teachers. We needed more black educators. I knew that our community was retooling and that we needed our brothers and sisters to take up the training manual mantle and begin investing, collecting their knowledge, and then going out into our community and transferring that knowledge to others through training, which is really what you're doing. Okay, so education and training, huge opportunity. I wrote this book about 10 years ago, so that is still true. I also said that there was a huge opportunity in finance and banking. Okay, finance and banking, because that's where the money is controlled. That's where the big decisions are made. I said there was opportunity in small businesses because they lead to big businesses, and we needed to be more entrepreneurial as a people. One, because it helps to create work and jobs for our people, because that's the only way to raise up the poor, and cashing in on the digital revolution by designing software and designing websites that millions of people will want to use. Again, these are all still true today. I thought that there was a huge opportunity in the area of publishing our own ideas, our own words, our own stories, and become an archival people instead of an oral people. We must shift from being an oral tradition to an archival people, where we write stuff down, we put it in books, we tell our story so it can be passed on to future generations with accuracy. So everybody has a book inside of them because everybody has a story. So
that's
publishing
right.
was a huge area of opportunity. I thought there was a huge
opportunity
of building our neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. It's like Paul says here, the gold at Fort Knox doesn't compare to the gold mine in the libraries around the world.
That's right.
And that's powerful in itself.
That's right.
That is powerful.
That's
that
right.
is powerful. You know, everybody can go to the library, start there, get a library card, and then you can borrow the books. And then after that, you start investing in yourself, you know.
That's right.
It
that's
is
right.
important.
So those are some of the areas of opportunity. People ought to get that book.
Mm-hmm.
They can get that book on Amazon.com. Or they can go to the library, just like you said, they can go to the library. It's in every library in America. So is Success
mm-hmm.
Runs in Our Race. And just rent it and read it and see if, in fact, you want to own
That's
it.
Right. That's right. That's right. Click, click, click. We have 10 minutes remaining, really.
Okay. All right. Click was a book that I wrote because when I noticed that people – when they were networking, they were doing some of the steps, and they had misinterpreted or abused other steps in the whole networking process. And so,
mm-hmm.
what I wanted to say to people, this is sort of advanced networking. These are the people who have, in a sense, mastered the first phase, the first level of networking. And what I said in this book is that clicking is important. Clicking is creating the win-win-win. I win, you win, and the world wins. When
mm-hmm.
Paul Allen met Bill Gates and they created a friendship, together
mm-hmm.
they created Microsoft and the world won.
Mm-hmm.
When Steve Wozniak mm-hmm. created a friendship with Stephen Jobs, together they created Apple and the world won.
Mm-hmm.
When Ben met Jerry and created a friendship, together they created Ben and Jerry's ice cream and the world won.
Mm-hmm.
When Ossie Davis met Ruby Dee, together
mm-hmm.
they created
mm-hmm.
theatrical excellence in America
mm-hmm.
and the world won. When Martin met Coretta, together
mm-hmm.
they created this awesome power couple, and civil rights was had, and the world won. So clicking is about creating the win, win, win. But you don't click with everybody that you network with, okay? But the goal of all networking, Daphne, is in fact to click. But let me repeat it. You don't click with everybody that you network. So how do you get to the clicking step or phase in networking? And so what I said in the book is that networking is really a three-step process and not a one-step program, okay? It's a three-step
mm-hmm.
process. The first step in building relationships is, in fact, what I call the networking step, and that is identifying, and this is a lifelong activity, identifying the people in which one wants to build a relationship with. And we meet people in shopping malls, we meet people on elevators, we meet people at conferences and workshops and seminars, and we meet them. And some of these people we've identified that we wanted to meet, and some of them we meet by happenstance and circumstance, right? And so once we
mm-hmm.
meet them, we exchange business cards, right? And then
mm-hmm.
we go on our way. We have a short conversation, we find that there's something we like about each other, and we exchange. But that's the identification process. That's the first step in the process. The second step in this relationship building process or networking process is the connecting step. And the connecting step, connecting is really based on common ground. Common ground is based on people, places, and things. And the more common ground you have with someone, the higher the trust level. The higher the trust level, the more willingness a person has to share key contacts, information, and resources. So that's the connect connecting step. And so once you finish with the connecting step, you built the relationship. Remember, the first step was the identification. The next step is the connecting. You're building the relationship, your culture. You're cultivating and nurturing that relationship in the connecting step. Now, most people forget this step, and they go right from the identification and exchanging business cards to calling up somebody and asking them for something, and they forget
mm-hmm.
the nurturing step. That's then, to initiate the connecting step, you have to follow up. If you get somebody's business card,
mm-hmm.
you have to follow up. I've been networking for
mm-hmm.
25 years. I've given out over 1 million business cards, and if everybody called me that I gave a business card to, Daphne, I would never get anything done in life. But here's what I know.
That's right.
Here's what I absolutely know, that 99.9% of all people that I give a business card to will never, ever follow up. They will not call, they will not write, and they will not email. So people can't get to the connecting step because they don't follow up in the first place. So I
don't
have to worry
about
it. So follow up, follow up, follow up. That's how you initiate the connecting step. And then the final step is the clicking step. And the clicking step is when two or more people have come together, connected, cultivated, nurtured, and built a relationship and created synergy where 1 plus 1 equals 11 and not 2. Synergy. That's
right.
What we're looking for. So you click when three things are in perfect alignment. This is what the book says, and there's a formula in the book. When chemistry, fit, and timing are in perfect alignment, that's when you click. You see, you and I could have good chemistry, good fit, bad timing, Daphne, we wouldn't click. We could have good timing, good fit, bad chemistry, we wouldn't click. We could have good chemistry, good timing, bad fit, we won't click. So chemistry, fit, and timing. And in the context of those three important things, there are 10 truths, and that's what the book is about. And three of the truths are aligned with chemistry, three of the truths are aligned with fit, and four of the truths are aligned with timing. I'm sorry, I had that wrong. Four of the truths are aligned with chemistry, three with fit, and three with timing. And so you need to read that book. One of the truths is bless them and release them. That's one of the truths.
Mm-hmm.
The sixth truth, bless them and release them. That really successful people are able to rid themselves of toxic people and bloodsuckers from their life. If you're not able to do that, you will fail in life. You will not succeed. This is very easy to say. This is extremely difficult to do. Why? Because many of these toxic people and bloodsuckers are your family members, are your significant others, are your so-called friends. And so we get caught up in this web. We get caught up in this emotional attachment to something that we know as opposed to things that are not known. This is why women who are beaten by men, they always end up going back, right? Because this is what they know. So this is a very, very important truth. It's the sixth truth in the book, Click, and people ought to read that book.
Yeah, and the title of that book is Click the 10 Truths to Building Extraordinary Relationship. You need to go out and you need to pick that up. George, you have 6 minutes remaining. I want you to tell people about the conference coming up, how they can register, who are some of the speakers there, and how they can personally get in touch with you, sir.
Well, first of all, anyone interested in the conference can do one of two things. They can call here right at the office at 216-691-6686, extension 330. That's 216-691-6686, extension 330. And we have a very special offer I'm going to announce in a couple of minutes for anyone listening today that wants to attend the conference. Because they were in the right place at the right time, because they were listening to Dynamic Daphne's web radio program, we're going to make them a special.
Awesome. We love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I say to people about the Power Networking Conference, I say this to those who are listening, and I ask you this question. Are you saying to yourself, and you're asking, are you saying to yourself, I don't know how to access my value? Are you saying to yourself, I'm not sure how to properly position myself in the marketplace? Are you saying to yourself, people don't see my value? I don't know how to create buzz about me. My image and personal brand isn't doing the job of increasing my income. Are you saying that I don't want to be overlooked again? Are you saying those things to yourself? Have you ever said those things to yourself? Well, at the Power Networking Conference, what you will learn is how to access your value, which is extremely important, how to confidently communicate your value, how to get buy-in from others, how to create buzz about you, how to position yourself for a promotion or a new position, and how to make yourself unforgettable. That's what you will learn at the conference. You're going to walk away with what I believe are new considerations for how to engage others in your dreams while helping them to achieve their dreams, because that's what networking is about. You're going to walk away with ideas for identifying the critical people that you need to surround yourself with and who are dream builders and not dream drainers. Very important.
Mm.
You're going to walk away with, at the Power Networking Conference, concrete suggestions and strategies for how to go about attracting the right kind of people in your life, and then you're going to get eye-opening insights for how to attract new customers into your business and how to attract referrals for your business. So everything will be there for you to expand your business vision, to create an invigorating destiny, which is what we all want, and to learn how to involve the talents and the expertise and the eagerness of others as your brilliance emerges in ways that will surprise you. So these are the kinds of things that you can expect at the Power Networking Conference. Now, who will be delivering this information to you, right? The best and brightest speakers, trainers, consultants, and coaches in Black America. No question about that. Everybody from Ed Gordon to Julianne Malveaux will be there this year. Beth Smith will be there this year. This young brother, Farrah Gray, who's written Reelionaire, brilliant young brothers, 27 years old. Jeff Johnson, cousin Jeff from BET, who's brilliant. Les Brown will be back. Reverend Dr. Otis Morse Jr. will do the closing remarks this year. Reverend Jesse Jackson will be there. Roosevelt Thomas, America's godfather on diversity, will be there. Mark Morial, the president of the National Urban League, will be there. So we'll have an incredible town hall meeting this year, Daphne. Moderated by Ed Gordon, and the title of the town hall meeting will be Our 10-Point Economic Recovery Plan for Black America. We know what the government's plan is, so what? What is our plan? What are you going to do? What is your specific, our specific economic recovery plan? So 10 ideas, 10 things that we must do individually and collectively as a community to help ourselves and not be totally dependent upon government help. So it's going to be a very provocative town hall meeting this year. And then some incredible workshops. And as you know, we specialize not only in educating, inspiring, and empowering our people at the Power Networking Conference. We specialize in giving them the working knowledge and the training in workshops, one-on-one, small, intimate workshops covering everything from building your business, building your wealth, branding yourself, how to use the internet, how to use technology, new ideas that you can come away with that you can grow your business and grow your profession, grow in your profession. So some incredible 25 workshops. We had like 8 each day concurrently, as well as power panel discussions on major topics, as well as a national town hall meeting, and of course our plenary sessions with some of the best and brightest minds in America. So it's a full 3 days of education, of training, and fun and power networking. I mean, there's no way that you can come to the Power Networking Conference and not meet at least 20 new people who you can help and who will help you and ultimately change your life. Now, a special...
Okay, and we hold a minute, George. We have our other guests on, and just give us a minute here for George to just mention what the special is, and we'll be getting right to you, Marsha. Give us a minute, please.
Okay, our special offer, The conference is $695. $695,
mm-hmm.
That's what we charge. And is it worth it? Of course it's worth it. If you met someone who could change your life on a dime, would that be worth $700? Absolutely. But if you're listening to Daphne now, you can go right to powernetworkingconference.com, powernetworkingconference.com. That's powernetworkingconference.com. Put in this code. You'll see a code, 041609, 041609, and it will reduce the price from $695, which is what we've been charging for the last 7 years, to $199.
Whee! Doesn't get any better than
right?
that, guys.
That's $500 off. Plus, you can bring a college-age student free of charge. Plus,
awesome.
You can
awesome.
Bring a
awesome.
College-age student. So that affects, in effect, makes the price for you two people $99 a piece.
Awesome.
$199,
awesome.
And you can just put in your credit card. You can purchase it right on powernetworkingconference.com and put in that code. You have to put in that code 041609 at powernetworkingconference.com, and you will get a $500 discount, and you will be able to bring a college-age student free of charge. That's our offer to you today. And then listen to our Power Networking preview series every Thursday. We have one coming up tomorrow with Kim Yancey from the eWomen's Network. And anybody that's interested in participating in that teleconference, it's free, doesn't cost anything. And if you want, I can give them the number that they can call in on. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And
okay.
I'm looking for folks to be involved.
All right. Thank you so much, George, for coming on and giving all that wealth of information. And I know we'll hear you back here on the Blog Talk Radio.
Absolutely.
Because you have what it takes to empower the listeners. Thank you, and keep doing God's work, George.
God bless you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Good morning, Marcia.
Well, good morning. How are you?
I am blessed, and I'm so excited that you have taken the time to be with us here, and I apologize for getting off to a tardy beginning with you.
No,
but I'll definitely make... I'm sorry?
I'm honored to be here, and thank you so much, Daphne.
Yes. I want you to take the first couple of minutes, Marcia, to introduce yourself to the listeners and tell them about the depths of all the things that you do to contribute to the empowerment and development of our lives. I know this morning your focus will be on the reactor factor, how to respond positively to negative people. But take some time so they know about who you are.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Well, I am a professional speaker and a best-selling author, which is very exciting. And I travel all over the world empowering people, Daphne, as you do. And I love it because you're the queen of the empowered soul, and I'm called the accountability master. So I think together we're
yes.
a match made in heaven.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? One of my goals is always to help people see the importance of taking personal responsibility for all of their choices, both personally and professionally. I learned this
yeah.
early on in my life, and I'm telling you, it has totally changed my life. My father always told me, the only two helping hands I will ever have are attached to the end of my arms, so use them. So I like that, and I've heeded his lesson, and it has certainly served me well. I retired from my corporate life in 1992. I was an executive vice president at Westinghouse Financial, and I did all that corporate stuff. And then I thought, it's time for me to live my life's mission. And my mission in life is to give back more than I've received and to connect my head and my heart with my mouth. So my belief is... Now I can do that from the platform and through my writing, my book publishing, and all of that sort of thing. So my goal, Daphne, is if I can help just one person a month, that's all I want, one person a month to move forward in a very positive, deliberate fashion, I am living and breathing the reason that I was put on this earth. And you and I know that we have all been put here for a very specific reason.
Oh, yes.
It is our job to figure it out and then to live that mission with every breath we have. So that's kind of my story, and I'm honored to be here. I'm married, a little bit about my personal life. I'm married. This is my second husband. I did have a practice husband. I divorced him years ago. I was you like that? And learned a lot, though. It was a good practice, and I call it tuition aid. Isn't it true? Divorced.
Oh, my God.
And now I've been happily married for 16 years, and it's just it's just so much fun. We're just having a ball.
Did you send the practice husband a thank you note?
I should have, and that's a good idea. He's on wife number 4 now, by the way.
Oh, my heavens. Oh, my heavens. I must tell the listeners that Marsha and I met maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I went to a retreat that Dr. Joel Martin was doing out in Phoenix.
Yes.
And I met Marsha. Dear Marsha came, and Marsha was one of the presenters. And I must thank you, Marsha, because you made such an impact on me. You are personable. You speak, and I can see it was coming from the heart. And
thank you.
You know, there are a lot of speakers that you can't say that about, because you know they are there to do their presentation, collect their check, and move on. But you got to the depth of our soul.
Thank you.
And I took the time to come up to you and have personal conversation with you. And although there were many people there who wanted your attention, you never for 1 minute got distracted from our conversation. And I just want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for noticing it. And I'll tell you what I get upset with, because in our industry, the industry that you and I have chosen, being it speakers and authors and media people and that sort of thing, I think the word that is missing with a lot of people is authenticity.
Yes.
And
yes,
they miss
yes.
that whole thing of whether you're on the platform, off the platform, whether you're writing a book, on a radio show, whatever you're doing. Be authentic. Be true to yourself.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And it really makes me cranky, because then when you see people that aren't authentic, whose credibility does it hurt? It hurts yours. It hurts mine. So I try very, very hard to live that authenticity, because in my view, that's how I want other people to be in their world and for me. So that's a real, real hard lesson, and it's something that I really strive to do.
You know, I know that there are no mistakes and accidents in life. I mean, us getting together, you know, my mission for doing the cable show, the cable TV show, the radio show, is because I have a vision of changing our world by transforming one life at a time.
Exactly.
And people look and say, one life? I said, that's okay. If I can make a difference in one person's life, that person is not going to see the world the same way they did prior to my transformation. And that's all it takes.
That's right.
It's a process.
They become the vehicle to deliver your message, because they've been so empowered. And they will continue to get that, you know, that kind of the snowball effect, and they'll get it rolling, so that my one person hopefully will transform a bunch of other people down the way.
Exactly.
And that is truly my goal. You know, these people that come out and say, well, I want to change the world all at once, it's impossible. So I want to be more realistic and more deliberate in sending my message out. You know, I really do. I really do. But it's so much fun doing it, too. You know, I age and as I get more, seasoned, I love being able to look back and see the people that do remember my message, like you. And I'm just so honored. You know, and that was 3 years ago. That's awesome.
Yes. I never forgot you. And when I started this blog talk, because I got to be honest, Marsha, from I met you, I said, how can I get this lady on my TV show? How can I get her on the radio show? Because I also do traditional radio. And I said, when I started the blog, I said, this is it, man. I got to have Marsha on. I got to. And I just want to commend you and thank you for the work that you are doing.
Thank you.
But let us.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Let us, Marsha, talk about entering into speaking because, you know, leaving Westinghouse for so many years, very successful in what you did there. But I am going to go out on the limb to say, you're entering into speaking. You probably felt a void while you were there and see that there was something missing from your purpose and calling?
Yes, and that's exactly right. Because remember what my life mission is, and it's been that for a long time, to give back more than
uh-huh.
I received, connect my head and my heart with my mouth. So when I retired,
uh-huh.
I was home for a couple months, and Al and I had just married. And he
mm-hmm.
said, you know, honey, I love you truly, but get a job because you're driving me nuts. So that allowed me then to step back and say, okay, what is it that I can do to translate my mission into action? And I think that so many times people really have the thought in their head, the feeling in their heart, but they don't have a mode of delivery. So my mode
uh-huh.
of delivery is my writing and my presentations. So that's why I chose being a professional speaker. And then what I realized in kind of diagnosing that whole industry is that the people that really related to me and that I remembered were fabulous from the platform. They had great
uh-huh.
messages. They were entertaining. They had fun. They didn't take themselves too seriously. And I thought, my goodness gracious, that's all the components of how I live my life. So all I have to do is wrap a net around it and figure out now how do I get into the speaking business. So what I did, Daphne, is I went to work for a public seminar company. They didn't pay me very much money, but it was great tuition aid. It helped me understand the industry, the audience. I traveled from South Africa to Australia to New Zealand to England, all throughout North America, and for 4 to 5 years, I really learned the business. Then I was able then to launch my own business and start doing keynotes and workshops and offering people CDs and DVDs and books and all the things that were take-home, you know, that they
uh-huh.
could really learn to be more authentic, to transform their life, to empower themselves. And so it's just been this ongoing kind of process for me, and I constantly am looking at my next step. Even when I'm halfway through a step, I'll be looking where am I going to launch myself next.
Yes, because it's about continuing preparation, because
yes.
in this industry, we must remain fresh
yes.
and well-informed and educated
yes.
and knowledgeable.
Right.
You know, I see.
That's one of the
Go
things
ahead.
That I have found is that everyone and all of your listeners really need to take this to heed. You need to be investing a minimum of 2% of your gross annual income in your own learning and development. You don't wait for your company to come back and send you to a program or buy you a book or get you a resource or a download. You have to invest in yourself, and that's personal responsibility. I think we need
That's
to
right.
look at our life like a CEO does a company. Every company
mm-hmm.
has some kind of research and development. We have to have a research and development company. I run every morning, and when I run, I listen to downloadable books. And
mm-hmm.
I'm always just, it's usually, it's a 30, 40-minute run, and I get that little piece of information. Now, what I did this morning, because I felt like listening to some of my R&B, is that I listened
mm-hmm.
to that for 30 minutes, and then the rest of the time I only had 10 minutes of listening to my downloadable book, but it freshened
mm-hmm.
my ideas and my perspective, and that's all I wanted it to do. So I think this is very important. 2% of your gross annual income needs to be invested in you.
You know, I tell people, Marsha, I have issues with people that their physical wardrobe, the cost of their physical wardrobe
yes.
is more expensive than their wardrobe for their intellectual capital. I
That's
say
exactly
it
right.
needs to either exceed it, your intellectual capital needs to exceed it, or at least equal. But you cannot be dressing up the outside when the inside is a mess. And
right,
our
exactly
people
right
need to understand that.
And what I look and when I see what people spend on their hair, you know, on their dues, on their nails, on, you know, all these other things, I think, well, what about that inside part? Because the
That's
minute
right
you the minute you make that inside part shine, I guarantee you that you're going to have the money and the financial wherewithal to dress up the outside on however you want to do that. But you've got to invest in your own, and I love your terminology because that's exactly what it is. It's intellectual capital. And
yes, and people need to understand that. Marsha, we have 44 minutes to go here, and I want us to start on your topic of today, the reactor factor, and how to respond positively to negative people.
Okay.
We are all surrounded by toxic people.
Yes, we are. We sure are. Actually, The Reactor Factor is my next book that is at John Wiley, New York right now, and it's going to be published mm-hmm October of this year. I just actually got a note from the publisher, and she said we're right on target as far as
dropping. Well, we have to have you back on before, prior to that launch.
That would be great, and I'll keep you posted as to when it's actually going to be in the major bookstores. But what you
okay,
talked
awesome
about. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, and my latest book is called Toxic People, Decontaminate Difficult People at Work Without Using Weapons or Duct Tape. And it's about taking personal responsibility for the difficult relationships. In the book, what I do, Daphne, and this is part, and this is actually Reactor Factor is an extension of Toxic People, is that
mm-hmm
I talk a lot about how to deal with the six different difficult people types, the six different
uh-huh
toxic types. But that's only half the book. The other
uh-huh
half of the book is where do you go when you become a difficult person? How do you manage your
uh-huh
own behavior in your own head? And how do I make sure that I stay totally in control and I empower myself? Because what we know is that when you get ticked off, when you get mad, when you start screaming, when you start acting like an idiot, you have now given your power to the other person. And I can
mm-hmm
guarantee that the people that are listening right now don't want to do that. And that's why I know that we are in so much more control than we allow ourselves to be. But we have something
right
in our heads, and I talk a lot about this in The Reactor Factor, is I call it mental terrorism. And mental terrorism are those little voices that come in when people start to push your buttons and tick you off, and those little voices will come in and say, all right, nail them. You may never have another chance. I want you to rip out their throat. Use those words. They don't deserve anything better than that. And we know that happens. You know, and what happens then is that it doesn't allow us to stay in control and to better manage that situation. And I don't care if it's personal, if it's professional, if it's a friend, if it's a colleague, if it's your boss, whomever it is your job as a human being to stay in control. It
That's
is
right
your job. Now, the reactor factor, what I like to talk about with that is a triangle. So just picture a triangle. And at the bottom part of that triangle, the bottom piece of that triangle, I call it the platform, it's your perception. And here's where I think human behavior really kicks in. Perception is very interesting because it's all determined on the frames of reference that you have, that I have, that each of your individual listeners have. Everybody in the world has a different set of perceptions and frames of reference. It has to do with our background, our culture, the country or the state or the region that we were raised in. Were we raised by a single parent? Were we adopted? Did we have a nice family? Did we have a dysfunctional family? All of that creates your perception of the world. So from that perception, the next layer of our pyramid right above perception is our belief. So that perception creates the belief that we have in the world. It's our core value. It's what we view and what we deem to be right and true. So what's right and true for you is probably going to be different than what is right and true for me on every single thing that we have to deal with on a daily basis. And again, it has to do with what did we learn when we were growing up. Now, here's where we get stymied. 77% of a normal person's self-talk is negative, where we say, I can't, I won't be able to, it'll never work, I won't even try, look at my background, I was told as a kid I'd never succeed. All this stuff between the perception and the belief, it's 77% of the time we have been told this, and it replays in our brain. Now, here's why that happens. At the age of 2 years old, and you know, I know, this is a child's most impressionable age, is 2 years old.
Yes, yes.
The average kid today hears 432 negatives every single day. Daphne, what is the first word a kid learns?
No.
That's it.
No.
So there you, that starts. Don't touch this. Don't do that. No.
Mm-hmm.
I told you once. I told you a million times. So what that does, it permeates our frame of references. That then becomes our belief. So what I have to learn then, how do I take those negative frames of reference and turn them into something more positive? Then it's up to me to freeze that frame of reference and turn it into something more powerful, more empowering, more positively focused. But see, that's something that I can choose to do. Because then the next rung on our pyramid, we've got the perception, the belief, and then our next rung right above that is the judgment. So we've got the perception, the frames of reference, we've got the belief, our core values, and then the judgment becomes the choices that we can make. And I'll tell you what, Daphne, I have made every lousy choice known to mankind. I have made more mistakes than the normal person. I truly have. But what I've learned with making choices and making judgment is that I call it the TLC of making choices. We can take it, we can leave it, or we can change it. When I take it, it means that in the moment it's not exactly how I want it, but it's not creating a bunch of stress and I'm not ticked off over it. I know that in the future, my planning is going to drive a better outcome. So right now, it's not exact, but I'm good with that.
That's
the
right.
The L in our TLC stands for leave it or reject it. And I'll bet, let me ask you this question, Daphne. Have there been jobs and have there been relationships in your life that you've had to walk away from?
Yes, because I look at it and I say, am I adding value to this relationship?
Right.
Is this relationship adding value to me or is it draining and depriving me? And in earlier years, Marcia, I used to have this feeling that, oh, I'm going to feel so guilty if I do this. Oh, I can't get out of this. I can't do that. But then I said, no, I'm not adding value to this person.
That's
I'm not serving
right.
this person. So it's time
that's
for me to get out. I enjoyed for the moment it lasted.
Right. And the L then stands for leave it and reject it. And what you just said is exactly why people get stuck in that rut, is because they don't want to take the chance and get out of their comfort zone. They don't want to move on to something else because that takes you to the unknown. People hate the unknown. People hate change. So that's why the T is the take it, the L is leave it or reject it, walk away from it. But so many people get hung up there. This is why people stay in dead-end jobs. They don't take the gumption within themselves to understand what are my talents, how do I package it, how do I reframe it, and more importantly, how do I take it on the street and how do I remarket it? Because even in this economy right now, there are people being hired. There are people not being laid off and getting promoted in businesses. Why? Because they figured this out. They have figured out this L part of the TLC. So I think that L can become a big blockade unless people understand they are 100% in control of their choices. Now, the C in our TLC stands for change it. It stands for the flexibility that we have in our learning, and I have to congratulate your listeners for being on this call and listening to it, because it means that they are at least willing to listen to some new options. They're interested in looking at changing. Now, they may choose not to, but that's okay. It's their choice.
That's
and
right.
At least they have some options rather than feeling burdened by the past, by feeling like they've had the net thrown around them and they can't move and that they're suffocating because life is absolutely taking the breath away from them. So I really believe that when we get stuck in that rut, we have to back ourselves up and say, do I take it, do I leave it, or do I change it? What is my plan? Because when I look at my triangle, the very top of that triangle is action. So the bottom of my triangle is perception. The next rung is the belief that I have, what is right and true to me. The next rung is the judgment or the choices I make using the TLC. And then the very peak of the pyramid is the action, the initiative that I take. Because a lot of people make choices, but they just don't take action.
That's right. That's right.
And that's where I have to learn how to communicate to the people around me what I am going to do, how they can help me, how I am going to move forward. I have to learn to take action and communicate more positively in my own mind. I have to learn and take action on how do I manage those people in my life that suck the life out of me, all those toxic people. So that's my job. That's my job. And I tell you what, Daphne, I know this every day. There have been people put on this earth to suck the life out of you. Isn't it true?
It is so true. It is like asking for patience and tolerance. I tell people all the time, be careful what you ask for, because in order to have the experience of patience and tolerance, you got to get tested.
Yeah,
so
right.
Be careful. And it's the same thing. People are going to be coming around to really test you. Push every button you have to make sure that you are committed to what you are supposed to be doing.
That's
Marsha,
exactly
do you find out that one of the key elements in preventing people from taking action is fear? Have you found that out? I know we mentioned about the unknown, but you see fear playing a great role in that?
Yes, I do, and that's because people get too much in a comfort zone and they define it differently than they should. They have to get out of their old comfort zone, and that's why this learning is so important. Of being able to read the books, do the downloads, watch the DVDs, and do all of these things, because the terms that we use oftentimes must be changed. And the minute you start looking at options and new alternatives is when you're able to move forward. And I'll give you an example of that. When people are being really negative to you, when people are kind of grinding you the wrong way, here's a communication technique that works every single time. It's called fogging, and what we know is fog diffuses the sun. So what this communication technique does when we use it on a regular basis, it will diffuse the anger and the ire of that other person, and this is what it sounds like. You may be right. Help me understand where you're coming from. Because what happens so often, our frames of reference become that static lens that we look through. And everybody has a lens that they look through. When I say you may be right, I'm not saying they're right. What I'm saying is there might be one little tiny thin thread of truth. I don't know. I need to know more. Tell me more about it. And I want to keep questioning. I want to keep finding out more from them. This works beautifully if you have teenagers or children. Instead of judging them immediately because of our own personal frames of reference, what I need to do is find out more. I need to become a better communicator. And I speak all over the world on this topic, and I'm still learning it. You know, I'm still downloading books and learning this to enrich my intellectual capital. And that's so critically important. And people that don't continue to learn are the ones that are going to start to fall back in their career and in their personal life. I guarantee it.
So yeah, because, Marcia, in this field, each audience and each individual that we encounter, they are unique. So we have to learn a special way in communicating with them. Because each time that you use the fog-in, you cannot say you're going to use it the same way with the next person because they are unique. It depends on their triangle down below. Each of us.
Yep.
Although it's
their belief system is going to be different than ours. So that's
exactly
why I have to have that flexibility, and I have to take different approaches. And I don't care if you're on the phone or in person, you really have to read between the lines. You have to you have to listen to their intonation. You have to listen to their word choice. You have to really pay attention, and you have to suspend all of your own judgment of the tone of their voice, their word choice, and all of the rest of that. So it becomes so important for us to be present and to be in the moment with that person, because the minute we're not, it's going to escalate. It's going to get worse.
That's right.
Now, here's what I know. If any of us have outcomes that we don't like and that aren't good for us, we have to go back, and we are the ones that indeed have to take the personal empowerment task on to look at, okay, is it my perception that needs to change? Is it my belief and the way I'm looking at my core values need to change? Is it the judgment and the choices that I'm making need to change? Are my actions needing to be more flexible? It is up to me to go back and look at one of those four. If I have any outcomes that are not satisfactory and are what I want them to be, then I need to go back and I need to rejuggle this. I need to look at what I can change. Because you know what I've learned, Daphne? We are never going to change another human being, ever.
No, no, you got to change yourself, and that's
right.
This is what a lot of people
What I found out is trying to change another human being makes for great first marriages.
I think I'll have to have a closer talk with you, Marcia, about moving on to a second one, because I am out of practice since 1985, and I still haven't found another one, so we'll have to talk about that part.
One of my early books that I wrote, this was 10 years ago, it's called Shopping for Mr. Right, because you don't have time for another Mr. Wrong.
All right, I got to go pick that up.
I'll get your emailing address, and I'll just pop it in the mail to you.
Okay.
That's exactly what I did. I was divorced for 18 years, and then I decided, because I'm a social person, that I really wanted to take control of my personal life, and I wanted to find someone. So that's how I found my husband, and I wrote the book on a dare. So.
Awesome. You know, I want to piggyback on something you said, Marcia, about knowing what's happening in all these relationships. And I had an experience once. I was coaching someone on the phone. And I felt this tension with the person. And I said to her, why do you have your arms crossed across your chest, and why are you frowning? And she said to me, Oh, my God, she said. I said, why did you respond like that? She said, that's exactly what I'm doing, and how did you know? I said, for the past 4 minutes, that's what I felt coming through your voice.
That's exactly
right. And she sent me an email, and she could not figure it out. I tell people, if you're on the phone and you're not smiling and all of that, the next person on the other end knows this.
In a heartbeat. Yep, they sure do. And what's interesting is that years ago, I started out my life as a kindergarten teacher, and I did not like teaching at all. So I went into sales, and I sold Yellow Pages over the telephone, hardest job I've ever had in my life. And what they did, and because exactly what you're saying, they put these stupid little mirrors by our telephone, and they had the audacity to take those little push-on letters and put S-M-I-L-E on the bottom of that dumb mirror. And it was so goofy, and I thought, these people are idiots, you know. And what it did, though, Daphne, is exactly what you're saying. When you picked up that phone, you would look in that mirror and you'd say, okay, put a smile in your voice, you know, whether you're making a call or picking up the phone, people can tell. People are very smart. And
oh,
they
yes.
can read
oh, yes.
right through that in a heartbeat. And so I think doing that sort of thing, it's kind of, it looks goofy, but it certainly makes its point for us because we are the deliverer of the information.
Mm-hmm,
and, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think something else, you can tell when people are folding their arms, and it really is very
oh, yes.
conflictive. I mean, and you can
mm-hmm.
tell when they have a furrowed brow and these little pursed lips, and they look like they're ready to
yes.
tear someone's throat out. I think it's very important. But what's happened to us is we get in these habits, and this is the biggest problem that we have in changing habits. Is that we'll listen to this kind of program, we'll, again, read a book or do something like that, and then we'll go back and we'll try that once or twice. It takes
mm-hmm.
21 days
That's
of
right.
daily focus and daily discipline to change an old habit, and this is why exactly
right.
why people don't
right.
change.
And
That's
they get,
right.
You have
they get right back in that rut. So my challenge is to really concentrate on changing the habit. And I learned something, this is some time ago,
mm-hmm.
from a gentleman that was very, very successful, Michael Jordan. And I'm sure we all are familiar with Michael Jordan.
Everybody
and his,
is familiar with
yeah,
him. Yeah,
his expertise, and he's, you know, made a few bucks and this sort of thing. But what I learned from Michael is that when he wants to change a habit, even to this day, he wears a rubber band on his wrist. And that
mm-hmm.
rubber band is identifies the one habit he is trying to change for that 21 days, because that's why we don't change habits. We forget that we're even doing it. So every time he looks at that rubber band, and I still do this to this day, is that I will look at that rubber band and I will say, okay, that's the habit I have to focus on. Now, the problem is that a lot of people get a little aggressive with this, and they have like 19 rubber bands going up their arms for all the different
mm-hmm.
habits they're trying to change, and you can
mm-hmm.
only change one habit at a time.
At a time.
Yeah.
At a time. One at a time.
One at
a one
time.
One at a time. Prioritize where you want to start.
Yes.
You
exactly.
can eventually change them all, but which
yep.
one is more taxing on you right now?
Right.
And that's the one you need to approach.
Right, and it's just like, have you ever set New Year's resolutions? Have you ever set them?
Oh, I stopped doing that a long time, and
okay.
I work into designing a plan because by the 3rd of January, you throw those resolutions
That's
out the door
exactly
anyhow.
Right. And people get so frustrated over that, and the reason that they do is that life happens, and they
That's
really
right.
don't understand the process of setting
mm-hmm.
goals and a focus and having
mm-hmm.
mentors, using coaches
mm-hmm.
like you or like me, and being
mm-hmm.
able to have the discipline to invest in themselves to move forward in a very positive fashion. You know,
mm-hmm.
and it's so hard to do it on your own. I've got a coach. I still have
That's right. We all do need a coach.
And if
and
you
lot
don't,
of people.
Yeah, and if you don't, you're going to start to slip backwards. And
exactly.
It's about that easy. So I think when we look at the reactor factor, to understand we are in charge of every single thing in our life, our perception, our belief, the judgment, and the actions that we take. Always remember that TLC, the take it, leave it, or change it. You know,
mm-hmm.
to change some of our communication habits using the freeze frame and being able to change those frames of reference and being able to really understand I'm in control here. I am in control, and I can do so much more than I'm allowing myself to do. And here's the one thing that is so bad about negative self-talk. It is 100% debilitating. Because what the mind perceives, the mind believes. When you tell
mm-hmm.
yourself, I can't, I won't be able to, it'll never work. There's actually a part in your brain called the reticular activating system that starts to believe that. And subconsciously, you will become your own roadblock. So we
That's
have
right.
got to stop talking negatively to ourselves. When you hit that little negative thing, when you say, I can't, just freeze frame that and say, no, I am making a choice that I can do this. It's going to be
That's
different
right.
and better tomorrow than it is today. But I'm the one that has to use the freeze frame. No one else can do that for me. You know,
that's
and
right.
that's one of the reasons that I have so many programs available, and I actually came up with a what I call my bailout plan. Daphne, what I did is I put together my 11 programs. It includes my Toxic People book and my CEO book and my Go for the Gold, and there's 11 different programs that are explained on my website. And if your people go into MarshaPetrieSue.com, and if they put in the code ILG, that's I Learning Global is what it stands for, because I'm on their CEO.
ILG is the code they need to put in?
Yes, on the shopping cart. Instead of $219, my bailout package, you get all 11 for $50. So that's
awesome.
A pretty good deal.
Awesome.
Yeah, you're saving 75%, and you get CDs. There's two DVDs in there. There's two books. And there's all kinds of things that are going to help you be better tomorrow than you are today. So, again, my website is Marsha Petrie Sue. It's M-A-R-S-H-A, P as in Paul, E-T as in Tom, R-I-E-S-U-E.com. And people are probably wondering about my name. My maiden name is Petrie, P-E-T-R-I-E, but my married name is Sue, S-U-E. And, yes, I married a boy named Sue.
Now, you are amazing. You are amazing.
He's 6'4 and weighs 260 pounds, so no one ever asks him about that last name of Sue.
Oh, they're not messing with the brother. They're just
no
not.
No way. They never will do that.
Would you repeat the quote, please, for the listeners?
I will. It's I L G. So it's the letter I L G. L is in learning, G is in global. So if you go into MarshaPetrieSue.com, go into the Tools for Success, and you'll see the package there. On checkout, you put in, it asks for a code, you put in ILG, and you'll be receiving all 11 programs for $50. It's a pretty good deal. You're saving over 75%. And I would also be very honored to autograph the books for you, too.
Awesome. So you got to get ready to autograph mine, because I got to go in there and get that package myself.
Oh, well,
Marsha, if you have any other means of people getting in touch with you, we have 17 minutes remaining. I would like for you to mention that right here now, please.
Okay, I will. They can tweet me. I'm on Twitter. And it's at MPSue. And that stands, of course, for Marsha Petrie Sue. So it's the ampersand at MPSUE. Also, if anybody is on Facebook, we've started a really cool club on Facebook, and it's called the Personal Responsibility for Success Club. And if they go on my website, they'll see it there, or they can email me at Marsha@MarshaPetrieSue.com, and I'll send you all the links that I'm on. But the Personal Responsibility for Success Club is very, very cool, because what I do is I go in every other day, and I just give them little reminders. Here's one of the ones I did last week. I was in Kohl's, and I was just making a quick – I needed some shower curtain rings. And I'm standing in line, and they opened up another line, and the gentleman standing behind me just about knocked me down getting in front of me. And the gal had said, next in line, please. Well, I stepped in front of the guy, and I said, excuse me, and thank you so much, sir. I was in line before you. And he said, you are so rude, and we went through this little diatribe.
Wow.
And, so anyway, I blogged on that, and what I talked about is being assertive. Standing up for your rights and not violating
That's right.
the rights of others. I didn't get
upset.
I didn't get mad. He was absolutely bright red, and he was so kicked off. But you could tell that's the way that man lives his life.
That's right.
How sad is that? And the good news is, I know there were a lot of other people standing in that line that watched my behavior. And hopefully just that one incident will be a reminder for all the people that are on my Personal Responsibility for Success Club to just step up and stand up for their rights. And don't let other people beat you down.
That's right.
That's why I like that. I got some wonderful comments on it, too. I think it's always fun when we blog and when we do that sort of thing to go in and look at the comments. I posted one yesterday that was about keeping your spirit up and how to build your self-confidence. And I do have a blog that I also post on, and that blog is decontaminatetoxicpeople.com. So that's one that I'm always doing different things on, and I've been blogging now for a couple of years, so there's all kinds of things. I wanted to take a minute, too, since we do have a little bit of time of talking about toxic people, because that's really my forte, is taking responsibility and making your environment the best that it can be. You want to, I wanted to talk a little bit about the six different kinds of toxic people. It just might be useful for some of your listeners, because I really do think that in today's economy, a lot of people really are becoming very toxic. You know, they talk about toxic mortgages and toxic loans. Well, I think there's toxic people out there, too. So the six different kinds of toxic people, let me just read them, and then I can talk a little bit about them if you like.
Go ahead.
Okay, the steamroller, the zipper lip, the backstabber, the know-it-all, the needy weenie, and the whine and cheeser. And by the way, this book is one of the books that is in the package that I mentioned. And also, I have the Toxic People book on tape. So if people want to listen to it in their car, they can as well. So if you're a listener or a reader, I handle both of them.
Is the tape, are the CD part of the package, or that's different?
No, it's all part of the package.
Okay, awesome.
It's all part of the package, and so it's really a good deal, because that in itself, if you just buy the Toxic People book on tape on the website, is $19.95, and the Toxic People book is $24.95. So you're almost up to $50 buying both those Toxic People resources, and you get nine others. So there's a lot on there. It's a lot.
Okay.
But let's talk a little bit about the six different difficult types. The steamroller, you know the kind of person I'm talking about, don't you, Daphne? The steamroller person. How can they make you feel? How do they usually make you feel?
Sometimes, depending on who you are, sometimes they get you kind of agitated.
Yes, they can.
You are not sure about who you are, and they are continuously coming at you to get going.
That's right.
They are the person that will do anything to get action.
And I think one of their goals, and the reason they choose this behavior, is because it really whittles down our self-confidence. It really makes us, as you said, question ourselves. So in the book, what I talk about is, what do I say then to this person? And here's one of the things that I like to say, is I'll say, Kim, as I was saying, I have a solution for this problem. Because a lot of times these are the people that constantly interrupt you. So what I have to do is I have to have something stored in my head that supersedes that negative thought that we were just talking about. So if I know I want to use their name, because that gets their attention, and I want to have something very specific to say to them. Kim, as I was saying, I have a solution for this problem. So it allows me then to get in the part of my brain that stores the words, that keeps me in control. It's very focused. It's very linear in its thinking. So it's a very specific way that I am going to approach a steamroller. Now, here's the problem that we have had in the past with managing difficult people. We use the same approach for every kind of person. And you can't do that because they all are choosing this behavior for different reasons. So in understanding that, what I want to do, I want to have different approaches. And I also know that these people will jump around. The steamroller can become the know-it-all, can become the wine and cheeser. And so I want to really pay attention, like you were saying, if you're even talking to someone over the phone, if you're really present with them, you'll be able to identify through their words, through their intonation, through their voice, you'll be able to tell where they are. The second one that we can talk about is the zipper lip. These are the people, I call them verbal anorexics. These are the people that shut down. You know, these are the people that will just in a like a team situation or whatever, they won't contribute. So what I can say to them is, what questions do you have? I want to ask them an open-ended question, not something that they can answer with a yes, no, or a grunt. When I can say something to them, I can see that you're being very thoughtful and you're thinking about your response. So I'll just wait. So that means I have to be quiet and I have to listen for their response and I have to give them a chance to think. See, we as human beings want to fill in those gaps because it makes us very nervous and very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So that means I have to count to 30 and let them be more thoughtful. Then if they still don't come up with something, I will come back to them and I will say, well, I can see that you really need to give this a little bit more thought. Now, my goal is, and the outcome that I want, is for us to get back together in 2 hours tomorrow morning, whatever it is, and you will have input. So I am now setting a ground rule by which we are going to communicate. So that works really well with the zipper lip. The backstabber, and you know what was interesting? When I was doing the research for my book, Toxic People, the backstabber was the one that everyone said was the most prominent in the workplace today. Just fascinating to me, the most prominent, and I think that's very sad. But I think what we have to do is to understand that the reason these people, the people choose this behavior is because it undermines the other person. And they've done it so long, and no one has called the behavior that it works for them. So they will continue to do it. So they'll go out and they'll build all these alliances with other people, and then at the most inopportune time, they will come back to us and slam us. So I have to be prepared with this backstabber where I will say something. Did you really mean that? Were you really serious? Do the rest of you feel this way? Is this becoming a problem? I have to be the one that calls the behavior because people are too chicken to do it, and they just don't do it. So with the backstabber,
Marcia, you have another 4 minutes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay.
The next one, and I'll just cover these last couple, the know-it-all. What I want to do is I want to recognize their expertise. The minute I recognize their expertise, they are good to go. And what most people do is they roll right over it and they don't recognize it. With the needy weeny, these are the people that are the victims. These are the people that need constant validation. And so what I can do is how about if I set a 10-minute time every week to sit down with them and give them the accolades and the reinforcement and everything that they need. That will help suspend some of their needy weeny behavior. And the last one, which is my personal favorite, is the whine and cheeser. These are the people that complain about everything. These are the people that will look at, you know, some of the things that are Obama is doing right now, trying to boost up the economy, and they'll say, well, I'm never going to see any part of that. That's not going to affect me. These are the people that will get a pay raise, and they'll say, oh, my gosh, now I have to pay more taxes. You know, nothing is ever...
never happy,
no matter how good it is, it happens to them. You know, it's just amazing. So those are the six types. We need to identify them. We need to identify them in ourselves and understand what kind of difficult behavior do I take on, and then how am I going to better manage that behavior. So that's kind of a quickie overview of the toxic people, and there's a lot more in the book and on the tapes and in the CEO of YOU, which has sold over 50,000 copies now. That's one of the books that is part of the package. And again,
awesome.
the package can be found on MarshaPetrySue.com under Tools for Success, and it's MarshaHA, P as in Paul, E, T as in Tom, RIESUE.com. And when you're checking out, use the ILG, it stands for letter I, Learning Global, ILG code, and you'll get that entire pack of 11 programs for $50. So it's really a good
awesome.
Deal. And I noticed also on your website you have my name there. So if anybody has a problem remembering how to spell my name, they can go on your website and see it.
Awesome. And next time we'll be sure, because I don't know what happened. I didn't receive your bio, so it wasn't up there. So the next time, I think you need to send that to me ahead of time so I have it in the file. So
okay.
If you're busy traveling and for whatever reason, I never get it. So
okay.
You have take a minute and a half to do some closing thoughts, please,
okay.
Marsha.
My challenge for everyone is to take personal responsibility for every single thing they do from this point on. Look at the habits that if you change them, your life would be more fulfilling and you would feel more empowered and more control. Remember, your perception becomes your belief, becomes your judgment and the choices you make, and that becomes the actions that you take. If you don't like your outcomes, you have to go back and look and see what can you change. It is 100% up to you to do that. And I want to leave the folks with one more thing, and it's a quote that is so near and dear to my heart, is a positive attitude may not solve all your problems, but it will annoy enough people to make it worth the effort.
Oh, amazing, amazing, amazing. I just wanted to just thank you, Marsha, for coming on and for delivering. I did not expect anything less. You just met right up and exceeded my expectation. I thank you for being a friend. I thank you for being a mentor and role model. And I just pray that the listeners will go out there and practice, and of course go to the website and get the packages, because I'm going to be doing that and to continue to add value to my life so that I can indeed add value to yours. And we'll have Marsha back in the near future to talk about her new book that is coming up. You were just educated, inspired, and empowered by Marsha Petrie-Sue. And she came to you this morning from out in Arizona. And I just want to thank her again. And go on back on the demand episode so you can re-listen and share it with others, because this is the kind of news you want to spread. Let everybody get educated and well-informed and empowered. And remember the importance of taking personal responsibility of who we all are. I want to thank you again, Marsha. And I want you all to join me on the 29th of April at 10 a.m. when our guest will be Dr. Miles Monroe, along with some other people on the panel on that day. Again, I want to thank you. I want to remind you that you do have a destiny to follow. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Remember, you do not have to settle for mediocrity, because you have the ability to create excellence. Stay blessed. This is Dynamic Daphne, the queen of the empowered soul, saying, stay the course and keep doing God's work. Love you all.
What's the plan that you have for me? The place you've called me to be.
What's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart?
Breaking of day. It's death. It's